Masechet Baba Kama Daf Kof Tet Zayin. Im Amar Lo Asil Et Shelcha, the Mishnah said that if you have two people, one with a barrel of wine and one with a barrel of honey, and the honey is leaking out, and the guy with a barrel of wine pours out his wine and saves the honey, but didn't say any stipulation beforehand, then he only gets paid his wages as a worker. However, if he said, I'm going to pour my wine and save your honey, and you should pay me the amount of wine that I spill out, then he deserves to get paid the amount of wine. We ask a question, Amai, v'ne male meshate ani becham. Why does the owner of the honey have to pay the value of the wine? Even if a stipulation was said, and the owner of the honey said, okay, fine, I agree, but afterwards he could say, I was just kidding. It's like if you say, you know, do me a favor, I'll give you $1 million. You don't really mean it. So when he said, you know, hey, I'll save, you know, can you pay, will you pay for the wine? I'll save your honey. He's like, yeah, I'll pay for the wine. But he didn't sign a contract. You know, it was just in the heat of the moment. And so he could say, I didn't really mean it. I was just fooling you because I really wanted to save my honey. Is that a binding obligation? Milo Tanya. Here's a braita where we see a case where it's not a binding obligation. The person could just say, I was fooling you. I was just saying it so you would help me, but you don't really have to pay. This case is Hare Shaya Borech mi Bet Asurim. Vaitam ma'aboret lefanav. Amar lo tor dinav avireni. En lo ela secharo alma. Amar le meshate ani becha. Hachaneme. Lema le meshate ani becha. Someone ran away from prison and he's trying to get away as fast as possible. And there's a ferry. Right, the prison is near a river. He goes to the river. He's got to cross the river. He'll be hopefully safe and sound that way. And so he tells the ferryman, listen, I'll give you a whole dinar, much more than would be a normal passageway. And so the ferryman says, okay, you know, maybe he wasn't scheduled to leave right now, but okay, I'll go and I'll take you. And then he gets there. So the ferryman says, okay, give me that whole dinar. The guy that ran, that broke out of jail, he says, no, I was just kidding. I just was trying to encourage you to take me right away. I don't really have to pay you. I can only have to pay you the regular price for taking someone. So therefore we see that one can say, I was just fooling you to get you to do what I said, but I never intended to really pay you the full amount. So why don't we say the same thing here? I never intended to pay you the full amount. And therefore, therefore he should have to pay, even in the, if he makes a stipulation, the guy who owns the honey should only have to pay the wages and not the value of the wine. That's the question. And our answer is actually, our case in the Mishnah regarding the honey is similar to the continuation of that baraita of the guy who broke out of jail. That brings the second case. If the guy who broke out of jail, instead of just saying a short phrase, take a dinar coin and cross me, instead if he says, take a dinar coin as your wages and take me across, thereby adding in bischarecha as your wages, so then he has to give the entire dinar. What's the difference? Ma'ishana desha, ma'ishana sefa. Amara mi barchama besayad hashole dagim min hayam. Famale afsadetani kavre bezuza. Rabbi Barchama explains, it's not just the extra word, it's also a different scenario. We're talking about a case where this guy, the ferryman, is a trapper. He scoops up fish from the sea, he's a fisherman, and so he can say to the prisoner, you caused me a loss of a worth of dinar. In that time that I took to send to take you across, he's not just a taxi driver who was going just back and forth anyway, but rather he's a fisherman. He's taking time out of fishing. He lost a dinar in his time for taking this guy across. Because he lost money, that's why the prisoner has to pay him a full dinar, right? That's, I guess, what is meant by bischarecha. Instead of your wages that you would have gotten as a fisherman, so take this. So in that case, then he can't just say, I was fooling you. He's got to pay the full amount. Our case is the same as that, because in our case, the guy, the owner of the wine, is also losing out by pouring out the wine. That's the same as the fisherman losing out on his ability to collect fish. So if the other guy is losing money, then the one that's being helped has to pay the full amount of the loss. If not, It was just a promise. Hey, take me across. You know, you see, he breaks out of jail. He sees a cab driver. He says, take me right now. I'll pay you $100, right, to take me a few blocks away. So since the cab driver is not losing money, because he otherwise he would have gotten a regular fare, therefore the prisoner could just take the regular fare. Similarly, if the guy had an empty jar and he says, hey, pay me $1,000 and I'll save your honey. The honey guy says, okay, yeah, I'll do it. Afterwards, he doesn't have to pay, right? Because the guy with an empty jar didn't lose anything. This is not, I was just saying that, I was fooling you, I don't have to really pay you. But if there is a loss, the helper experiences a loss, then the one to receive the help does have to pay for that loss. Shatafnat hamoro v'chamor chabero shelo yafeh maneh. The Mishnah brought a second case, and we're going to ask, why do we need both cases? The second one seems to be the same thing. You have a donkey worth $100 and a donkey worth $200, and they both go out into the river, and the one that's worth $100 is a good, that owns the one worth $100 is a good swimmer, and he can save, but he can only save one of them. If he just goes and saves the 200 one, the 200 guy just has to pay him for his effort. But if he stipulates beforehand and says, if I save yours, you'll pay for mine, he says, yeah, okay, then he has to pay, then the guy who owns the 200 has to pay the guy who saved it for his loss. Now, why do we need both? Usiricha. Diashminan kamaita. Hatam hu dechi piresh yahib le deme kule. Mishum de beyadayim kapased. Avalacha de mela neema en lo ela secharo. If I only had the first case with the honey and the wine, I would say in that case, where the owner of the honey explicitly makes a condition, that's when the owner of the honey has to pay the owner of the wine. Because the owner of the wine is actively destroying his wine. He's pouring it out actively, which he wouldn't have done otherwise. So he deserves to get paid. But you might think that the donkey that would die on its own. He's not actively killing his donkey. The donkey is already out in the river, already drowning. If you just do nothing, it'll drown anyway. So I might have thought that maybe there, the owner of the 200 donkey could say, well, you didn't kill your donkey. It was just dying anyway. You just didn't save your donkey. So we might have made a difference. And therefore, we need the second one to say, even in that case, if you make a stipulation, the donkey of the 200 donkey has to pay the 100 donkey the value of his of the $100. V'yesh minan sefa. Now, if you only had the second case, we would say, hacha hu debistama eno ela secharo mishum dememela. I might think that in the second case, when there's no stipulation made, and you don't have to pay, you only have to pay wages, because the donkey was going to die anyway. So therefore, there's less of a reason why the guy who was helped would have to pay for the loss, because the loss was automatic. But in the first case, where even if there's no stipulation, the guy who owns the wine is actively pouring it out and destroying his own property, there I might say that even without a stipulation, the owner of the honey does have to pay. And that's why I need the first case to say, not so. In both cases, it doesn't matter whether it's an active destruction of one's own property or it was going to be destroyed automatically unless saved. Either way, if there's no stipulation, you don't have to pay. If there is a stipulation, then you do have to pay the full value of the loss. Let's say there is a stipulation. Two donkeys went in, and guy said, listen, if I save yours, you'll pay for mine. He says, yes, I'll pay you $100 for yours. If you save mine, that's worth $200. It's worth it for the guy who's $200. Okay, so he jumps in, saves the $200 one. In the meantime, the $100 donkey is able to get to safety on its own. And so now what? Does he still get paid the $100 and keep his donkey? That means the lifeguard guy actually makes money. Or does the $200 guy tell him, well, you got your donkey, so actually you didn't have a loss. So you know what? I'm not going to pay you. And Rav's answer is, from heaven has had mercy on him and saved his donkey. So that's just extra good luck that the $100 guy got. The $200 guy still has to pay because that was the stipulation. It's as if he said, listen, if I jump in and save your donkey, you'll give me $100? He says, yeah, I'll give you $100 to save it because it's worth $200. Even though that's more than normal wages, if it was, if you're able to hire a normal worker for that for doing that, it might be only $10. So, but he made a stipulation. So I'll give you $100 if you save it. So yes, you have to pay $100. And the fact that he got his donkey back is extra good luck from heaven. So he can keep that as well. And now we're going to get into a few very interesting cases about caravans. And joint responsibility on caravans. People would travel across the desert in caravans, so you'd have a lot of people all together, and they would protect each other from bandits and wild animals, and they would also share the burden of security and also share the burden of loss should there be a loss. So here we have a fun case of Rav Safra, and he is in a caravan, Lavin hu lahu ari, and there was a lion that was following them. Dangerous. So they said, how are we going to deal with this lion? They can't beat it. So they said, well, let's feed it instead. So they would take turns, right, of all the people there. Everybody takes a turn. They had a calendar to give the lion a donkey every night. And that way, if a hungry lion is much more dangerous than a satisfied lion. So if they give it a donkey, then hopefully it won't attack anybody. So they're going around and everybody gives a donkey each night. And the lion is very happy and they're okay. They're safe enough. Rav Safra's turn. So Rav Safra naturally sent the donkey down out there. And the lion was not hungry that night and didn't eat the donkey. So Rav Safra went early in the morning to get his donkey back. Right? He gave his share. He offered it. It happens to be the lion didn't eat it, so therefore he can get it back. So this is similar to the case over here. Although Rav Safra gave what he was supposed to, just like the $100 lifeguard, he did what he was supposed to, and he saved the other one. Here also, he provided security to everyone. Happens to be that the thing that he thought would be a loss to provide the security ended up not being lost, right? His $100 donkey ended up finding safety. This guy, Rav Safra's donkey, ended up not being eaten. So good, that's good fortune. So he accomplished his responsibility to the other caravan owners, and he can go and get his donkey back. But here's a question. Why did Rav Safra have to go early and make sure to reacquire his donkey? Even though he had intention to make it ownerless to the lion, right? He said he's willing to give it over to the lion, but that's only if the lion eats it. His intention was not to make it ownerless for everyone else to acquire it, and therefore, if the lion doesn't eat it, then Rav Safra should get it back automatically. He shouldn't have to go and wake up early and make sure to take it before someone else does. No one else would have the right to take it anyway. His answer was, Rav Safra did it as an extra precaution. He just didn't want anybody else to even think that, oh look, the donkey wasn't eaten, I'll take it because Rav Safra gave it up anyway and it's ownerless. So really, Rav Safra didn't have to. He wanted to prevent that situation of even getting into a fight with someone about that. So that's why he went early and he got it himself. But really, it belongs to him. So that supports even more the ruling over here by Rav that it does belong to him. Just like Rav Safra, he offered his thing, but otherwise it belongs to him. So too, the lifesaver, even though he gets his donkey back because it happened to swim to safety, so that's his luck, but he still also gets paid because he did fulfill his responsibility to the other. That's the same as Rav Safra fulfilling his responsibility in providing security. And so now you don't say that, well, he has to donate his donkey to everybody as security. He made sure that the lion was happy that night. Okay, back to the donkey case. So with the one that's $100, one is the lifeguard, and the other one has the $200 one. And so let's say they stipulate, they make a deal, and then the lifeguard goes in to save it, But he's not able to save the $200 donkey. He comes back out. So now, how much should he get paid? This is, what kind of question is that? Obviously, the $200 guy doesn't have to pay the $100 for his lost donkey, because the stipulation was not fulfilled. The stipulation is, if I save yours, then will you give me $100 for mine? He says, yes. Okay, did you save it? No, he didn't save it. He still has to pay the wages, because he still did jump in and he did the work. This is the same as if any time you hire a day laborer, you hire someone to work by the hour, you're paying them for an hour of work, whether or not they accomplish the goal or not. That's the definition of paying for an hour. Whereas a contract worker, you're paying for the job, right? Do the job. If you take shorter, good luck to you. If you take longer, then that's your problem. So here, you're paying him his wage for his time, and he took the time and effort to go and save it. Okay, he wasn't able to. So this is an obvious answer. Now, even though this ruling was obvious to the Biuda Nasi, that he said, what's the question? Obviously, you have to pay him the wages, but not the extra amount for the other $100 for the loss of the other donkey. Isn't that obvious? But here's a challenge, itibe, that I've asked from a baraita. Hasocher et hapoel avi kiru vedur maskanin lachole, v'alachum so shemet o shehibri, noten lo secharo meshalem. A sender hires a worker to go and bring some cabbage and Damascus plums to a sick person. Evidently, these have good medical benefits, and so this person's really sick, I need you to get it there right away. So let's say this is a messenger, and the messenger might usually get $20 an hour for bringing it there. But because this is an emergency and the person's sick, he says, listen, I'll pay you $40 an hour, right? And the city's an hour away. Go and get it to him as quickly as possible. It's very, very important. And so he goes and the messenger does the job. But when he gets there, he finds that the sick person had already died, or he got better. Either way, for good or for bad, he doesn't need the medicine anymore. So now the sender, can he say that, well, you know what, he died anyway in the meantime, so you know he didn't need it. So I'm only going to pay you 20, not the extra 40 for the rush delivery fee because he ended up dying. No, you can't say that. Rather, the Baraita teaches, you have to give the full wage, even the added amount. So now this is a challenge. Just like over there, you have to pay the full amount no matter what, whether the medicine helped or didn't help. You have to pay. So too, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, why don't you say that you have to pay the full amount to the lifeguard, and you have to pay him not only the wages but also the extra $100 that you stipulated with him, whether or not he was able to accomplish the task of retrieving the $200 donkey. Good question. Amale midame, but Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, well, are these cases, are they similar? They are not. In the case of the medicine, the messenger fulfilled his assignment. His assignment wasn't to get the sick person better. His assignment was get these plums over to his bedside as quickly as possible, which he did. And so it's not his problem that in the meantime he got better and already left. So he accomplished what he was asked to do. Whereas the lifeguard said, I will save your donkey. If I save your donkey, then will you pay for my donkey? Okay, but he didn't save the donkey. All he did was jump in. That's why he is paid the wages for his effort, but not the extra for what he did not accomplish. Tenor Rabbanan, Shayara Shaita Melechet Bamidbar Vamad Aleha Gais Letorfa, Mechashevin Lefi Mamon, Ven Mechashevin Lefi Nefashot. If there is a caravan traveling in the desert, and then some bandits come, and they're about to attack it and pillage it, but they come to an agreement, they'll pay a ransom. So leave us alone, we'll pay you $1,000. Let's say there's 100 people in the caravan. So now they collectively paid $1,000. How much does each one have to pay in to that $1,000? So we calculated according to the amount of money and merchandise each person is carrying, and not according, and not equally according to the number of people, right? Is they paid $1,000, you don't have everyone pay 10 equally, but rather the guy who's carrying jewels, he had a lot more to lose, that if the bandits came, they would have taken, you know, some of his jewels. The other guy who's carrying hay, wouldn't have lost much. And therefore, everybody pays according to a ratio of the amount of merchandise that he has. ואם סחרו תייר הולך לפניהם מחשבין אף לפי נפשות ולא ישנו ממנהג החמרין. Now, if they hire a scout in front of them to say to take them in the best way, a safe way, a direct way, they won't get lost, they won't get go in the middle of a dangerous area, then they also account according to the number of people. Everybody benefits from getting there safely, not getting lost. You get lost, you could be killed, you could be in difficult weather. And so everybody benefits from that. And therefore, for that, you include in the calculation the number of people. It says, af lifin nevashot, so it could be that you take into account both within the calculation, everyone pays a certain amount, and a person who has a lot more might pay a little bit also more than the others. However, one should not change from the custom of donkey drivers. Donkey drivers, they have set procedures, they do this all the time, and therefore they all, if in your area those people all just pay according to the person to pay for the scout, then just do equally according to the person, right? Follow the normal custom. Rasha'in ha-chamarin lehatnot shekol mi she'yavad lo chamoro ya'amid lo chamor acher. The donkey drivers, sometimes they make a stipulation that if anyone's donkey gets lost, then they will all chip in to buy him another one. It's a kind of insurance plan, so that no one person will have a total loss. It's going to happen on the way that someone's will get lost. Okay, we pay for it. Bechusya en ma'amidin shelo bechusya ma'amidin lo. However, if he lost it through negligence, then they're not going to pay for it. You didn't watch your donkey and you let it go walk off. We're not paying. But if it's not negligence, that's only when the insurance will come and pay. And if the donkey driver who lost his donkey said, listen, I don't want you to buy me a new donkey, just pay me the value of a new donkey, we don't listen to him. Why? Because then he's not going to watch the caravan sufficiently. When you have a caravan of donkey drivers, everybody has skin in the game, so they're all going to be vigilant against attackers. So that's good. If this guy has cash and not a donkey, then he's just gonna, that's it, he'll leave and he'll take his money and go, and he's not gonna watch. And even if he says, oh, pay me for the donkey, I'll watch, I'll be on guard. It's not the same. Someone who really has skin in the game is certainly gonna be guarding with much more attention than someone who just promises to say, yeah, I will guard, but really he's gonna go and take naps and not be so careful. Pishita. Now, isn't this obvious that we buy him another donkey? See, it's in the interest of the whole caravan to actually make sure that he gets another donkey so that he will then watch with them. So isn't this obvious? La sericha de itle chamara acharina. Maudete maha kam min tarle. Kamashmalan shane turata de chad mentinetiruta de betere. It's not obvious because we're talking about a case where that donkey driver who lost one donkey has another. He has two donkeys. One got lost, one is still there. So you might have thought that, well, he's going to stick around for sure to watch the donkey that he still has. So maybe in that case, he could demand payment and just keep the money for the other one. And so therefore, this teaches that the amount of guarding that you're going to do if you have two donkeys is much more than if you have one. So that's why we say, no, you can't just take the money. We're going to buy you another donkey, and that way you'll have two, and you'll make sure to guard them, and then therefore benefit everyone for guarding it a lot. Teno Rabbanan, Sifina Shaitam Alechet Bayam, Amadala Nachsholetova, Vekelo Mimasa, Mechashevin Lefi Masoi, Ven Mechashevin Lefi Mamon, Velo Yishanu Miminhag Hasapanim. If there is a boat that's going on the sea, and then the sea becomes turbulent, and the boat's going to sink, and so the sailors, they have to lighten the load, and they throw some stuff off. So the deal is part of insurance policy, right? Whatever they throw off, they're going to share the burden of the literally here, the burden of the loss. However, when we calculate the loss, we go by weight, not by the amount that it's worth. So if you have a guy there that has a box full of lead and another guy who has a box full of gold and they end up throwing off the box full of gold, the guy with the lead doesn't have to pay the value of the gold, but rather the value of lead. You go according to a standard amount of weight and not according to not worth its weight in gold, but rather worth its weight in lead. And furthermore, that's the law. And furthermore, you should not change from what the customs of the sailors are. The sailors are doing this all the time, and they have a system by which they calculate. So if there's a system in place, just follow the normal custom. If you have a caravan of boats, all the sailors can get together and they say, listen, if anybody's boat gets lost, then we'll all chip in and we'll provide money to buy another boat. Boat insurance. Abdallah bechusya and mamidin. Shelo bechusya mamidin lo. Now, if his boat sank because he was negligent, he was going off path, he was driving recklessly, so then they're not responsible. They don't have to chip in, but the insurance will pay if he was not negligent. If he sailed to a place that boats don't usually travel, he decided, I'm going to go to a different path. Let me try out a new route. Then they do not have to provide for him another boat, right? He has to be doing everything that's safe. We ask Peshita, isn't that obvious? Well, you think that the insurance is going to pay when you are reckless and go travel where people don't usually travel? So the way that they did, they used to drag the boats along near the river. In other words, they have the boat in the river, close to the shore, and they'd have ropes, and they'd actually pull the barge along the path. Now, how far away is the boat from the land? It depends. In Nisan, after the rainy season, so now the rains are the rivers are high. So then you should have it only one rope length away. You know, pretty close. Whereas in Tishrei. But Tishrei is after the summer, and now the rivers are low. So then you keep it further away from the land. Now, so both of them are normal paths. That it just depends on what time of the year it is. However, this guy, what did he do? In Nisan, where the rivers are high, he had the boat go two rope lengths away, which is fine for Tishrei, but it's too far for Nisan. Nisan, already they're high and the big waves, and now you're doing it far away. Maybe it's like faster to do it that way, and it won't bump into the land, but it's more dangerous because they're high. And so now he does this, and the boat gets lost, sinks, it goes out of control. So in this case, you might have thought that, well, he's taking a usual route, because this route is used in Tishrei, so that's why this statement, this Baraita teaches us, not so. You have to use the usual route that's appropriate for the time. Otherwise, it's considered negligent, and the insurance co-op does not have to pay. Tenora banan sheira sheita me'alechet b'midbar v'amad gayis utrafa v'amad echad mehen v'isil hisila emsa v'imamad ani asil atzmi hisila atzmo. Rebraita, similar to the case in our Mishnah, a caravan is traveling in the desert. Some bandits come and they pillage it. Okay, so now all the people, they lost their stuff. But one guy comes and he's able to save the day. He goes and rescues all the caravan from the bandits. Very good. So now, if he didn't say anything, so he benefits the common good. Whatever he saved, everybody gets back their own stuff. Because he didn't say anything. So good, he saved the caravan. Very nice. However, if he says, I am saving everything for myself, if he makes that stipulation, then he gets everything. Since everything was already lost, right? The bandits were already in control. So everybody lost their property. He got it from the bandits. And he said, I'm saving it for myself. He risked his life. He keeps all of it. We ask about this braita. What exactly is the case? If it's talking about a case where the people are able to rescue their own property, they just didn't get around to it yet, but they can get up and rescue it, then even when the guy says, I'm going to save for everybody, he shouldn't get it, right? Eventually, everybody would have gotten their own stuff back anyway. So he can't just make a declaration and go and take everybody's stuff. So that doesn't make sense. And if it's talking about a case where they would not have been able to rescue their own property, they didn't have arms, they weren't strong enough to do it, and only this guy could, then even if he doesn't make a stipulation explicitly, he should be able to keep it for himself, because there's no way they were going to get it back anyway. That's it. They relinquished ownership. Now he takes it. So why would it make a difference if he makes a stipulation or not? We're going to have three answers to this question. Amar Rami Barcha Mahacha Beshutafin Askinan Uhugon Sheze Shutaf Cholek Shelo Ledat Chabero. Amar Palig Lo Amar La Palig. Oh, we're talking about a case not of regular caravan, a caravan where everybody has their own stuff and they just decide, okay, we'll travel together and insure each other. Rather, we're talking about actual partners. They own equal shares in this merchandise. And we're further talking about a case where any of the partners is permitted to divide his property without the consent of the others. At any time, he could dissolve the partnership and say, if he wants, you know, so I'm taking my shares and we're not partners anymore. So assuming all that, if he makes a declaration and says, I'm saving everything for myself, then he has, in effect, dissolved the partnership and says, okay, we're not partners anymore. And now I'm taking everything myself because everybody gave up because you cannot save it on your own anyway. So that's that's why he has to make that declaration to dissolve the partnership. But if he didn't say anything, then there is still a partnership. If there's a partnership and one of the partners saves all the property, so he saved all the property, great. And he did the partners a favor. He saved his own share and he saved their shares also, but still their shares. They still get to keep it. So he saved the whole thing on behalf of everyone else. So that's the case that I was talking about. If it's not a partnership, but rather individual caravan members, well, that's not a partnership. So then you're right. He wouldn't have to say anything, because even if he does say anything, there's no partnership to begin with. It's the same as a dissolved partnership there. If they can't get it, then he can take everything for himself. But if it's a partnership, you have to say a statement first to dissolve the partnership. And then I'm not getting our shares. I'm taking everything for myself. Rava Amar, Hacha bepoalin askinan ucherav. Damar Rav, poel yachol lachzor bo afilu bachasi hayom. Rava said, the guy who's saving all the stuff, he is not one of the caravan members or a partner, but rather he's a hired security guard. Okay, the hired security guard, and we're following Rav's opinion, who says that a day worker, a day laborer, can quit anytime he wants. You can't force him to stay the whole day even. If in the middle of the day he says, I quit, so he won't get paid for the rest of the day, that's fine, but you can't force the person to pay. You can't force a person to work. So we're talking about a hired security guard. If he doesn't say anything, then he's acting as a hired employee. Anything that an employee does benefits the employer. So he saved everybody's stuff. Good. That was his job. He scared away the bandits. He salvaged everything. So he did his job. And now the employers who hired him, they get the benefit. However, if he makes a declaration and says, I'm saving it for myself, in effect, he's saying, I quit. I'm not the security guard anymore. I'm a private individual. And so he goes and saves all the stuff. He gets to keep everything. He's not an employee anymore. He doesn't work. I don't work for you. I saved it for myself. Brilliant. V'chama de la hadar be kibirshute de bala bayit dame. V'chi hadar be ta'amachrina hu dichtiv ki li b'nei Yisrael abadim ve'lo abadim la abadim. As long as he doesn't retract the statement, the Gemara is further explaining this, he's considered to be under the jurisdiction of the employer. So whatever he does, the employer gets. But if he retracts his opinion, then he's no longer an employee. And this is a proof for Rav that someone's allowed to quit anytime, because it says Bnei Yisrael are servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, that we have no choice. We agreed to that. But we are not slaves to slaves, meaning no one can be forced to be a slave to another person. And therefore, while someone is a day laborer, yes, he agreed to, it says, I'll work for you. And anything I do to this day, you get. But you can't force a person to remain an employee, because he doesn't have to give his service over to another human being, because everybody is actually free and is a servant only of their creator. A beautiful way of incorporating Agadah into a halacha. Rav Asher is a third answer. About a case where the other caravan members could rescue it with great difficulty. If they'd really try, they could get it back. So, but this guy is very strong and he goes and gets it back. So if he reveals his intention, he says, I'm going to get it for everyone. And they just sit there and do nothing. So that then they show their intention that they give up. Okay, fine, you get it. So therefore he gets it. But if he does not say anything, then the people could come and say, no, we were going to get it. I know it's difficult, but we were mustering our energy and our courage and we would have gotten it. So then they all share the bounty equally, and the guy who saved it can't say, I saved it for myself, because it's possible that the other people would have come and saved their own property. Next Mishnah, HaGozel Sadeh Mechavero Untalu HaMasikin Im Akat Medina Hi Omer Lo Hare Shelcha Lefanecha Im Echamat HaGazlan Chayav La'amid Lo Sadeh Acher. Someone steals a field from his friend, and after this local thief comes and steals some land, then a bunch of thugs come and take lots of land. So now if this is a regional disaster, like a little army came and took lots of people's land, then the thief can tell the original owner, listen, here's your land. It's not my problem anymore. You can go and get it if you can. So in that case, the owner cannot retrieve the land from the local thief. He's got to go get it from the regional, because this is attacking anyone, and his land would have been stolen by the big attacking army no matter what. And therefore, the owner has to get it from the bigger army and not from the local thief. However, if this guy's land was taken by the oppressing thugs because of something that the robber himself did, as the Gemara will explain, then the thief does have to provide the owner with a different field. Can't get that one, but it's your fault that they took my field. Then he has to give him an equivalent. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, man detane masikin la mishtabesh, man detane masikin la mishtabesh, man detane masikin la mishtabesh, tichtib b'masor u'b'masok. There's two different versions of the girsa of this Mishnah, of this word masikin, which means thugs or oppressors. If you have masikin with a samech, that's not wrong. And if you have masikin with a sadi, that's also not wrong. What you can prove from here, by the way, is that the Mishnah was transmitted orally, by heart, because samech and sadi do not look alike. And so you wouldn't make this mistake if you were writing it. You'd only make such a change if you were reciting it orally. Masikin or masikin. It's hard to distinguish between the two. Okay, if you say masikin, that's correct, because the pasuk in Devarim says bemasor ubemasok, in a siege or distress. So that's referring to enemies who come and distress you, as the continuation of the pasuk. So masok refers to enemies. Now mandatane masikin la mishtabes tichtiv ye yaresh hase la sal metargiminan yech senine sakea. Pasuk that says locust will consume, that's not the word, but rather from the Targum that says locus sakena'a, that's the same as masikin, so consuming force that destroys things or takes things, that's also correct. So either one, it refers to the same thing. Im mechamat hagazlan chayav. Now what does that mean? If the thugs took this particular land because of the local robber. And how would they do that? Hechi dame, ilema da anasu halad adide, vela anasu kule arata, ha mereshash matmina, imekad matmidinahi, pechule ilala. If the thugs came and they took just this particular land that this thief stole, but they did not take any other land, well, we could figure out what the halacha would be from the resha. Since in the resha it says that if they took everybody's land, the thief is not responsible, so we could see if they didn't take everybody's land, they only took this land, then the thief would be responsible. So we would know that. So what's the Sefa coming to teach? Rather, the Sefa is coming to add a case where the local thief didn't actually take the land, but rather when the thugs came, they said, hey, you know what? What's some good land here to take? And he showed them, oh, that guy has some nice land. So this guy who pointed the thugs in this direction, he didn't physically steal it, but he caused this person's land to be stolen. So that person is responsible. That's one answer. Or we could be talking about a local thief who actually did steal someone's land, and then thugs came and they said, hey, you know, where's your land? We're stealing it. And so the thief shows them his own land, but he also points to the land that he stole. So in both cases, the owner's land would not have been stolen if not for the thief pointing it out, either because he's pointing it out or because he actually stole it first and then is also pointing it out. Either way, since it would not have been stolen otherwise, the thief is responsible. But if a bunch of thugs come and they take the whole neighborhood and it would have been stolen anyway, then the thief is not responsible. Story. Hahu gabra dachve akarya dechite debe resh galuta. Atal kemed Rav Nachman. Chayve Rav Nachman shalome. A certain guy, he showed piles of wheat that belonged to the Resh Galuta. Some thugs came and says, oh, we want to steal something. Who has some, you know, what should we steal? He said, oh, the Resh Galuta, he's very rich and he has a lot of wheat. You know, go take his. And the thugs came and took it. And so the case came to Rav Nachman and said, you are liable. You pointed the thugs in the direction of the Resh Galuta. You have to pay. Yatib Rav Yosef Ahore de Rav Huna Bar Chia. Yatib Rav Huna Bar Chia came de Rav Nachman. Amar le Rav Huna Bar Chia de Rav Nachman. So there was a study session in which Rav Yosef was sitting behind Rav Huna Bar Chia. That means Rav Huna Bar Chia was a more advanced student sitting in the front row, Rav Yosef in the second row, and they're sitting before their teacher, Rav Nachman. So Rav Huna Bar Chia, the student in the front row, asks the teacher, Rav Nachman, when you made that ruling that you said this guy who pointed the thug towards the Resh Galuta, you said he has to pay, what kind of judgment did you do? Was that a halakha? Was it a monetary obligation? Like if you steal something and you owe something? Thing, or is this a fine? Now, this is really directly a cause of the damage, like he's a damager, or no, he's indirect, he didn't really cause the damage, but we want to fine the person to prevent people from doing that kind of action in the future. So Rav Nachman says, oh, look, compare it to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, if someone's land was taken by thugs and it was because of a thief, the thief has to give him other equivalent land. And we explained the Mishnah just now that it's talking about a case not where the thief stole it himself, but where the thief simply pointed the thugs in the direction and said, oh, take that land, this is nice land, and yet it says you have to pay. That was Rav Nachman's answer. Now, it's not really clear from this answer whether it's a fine or a monetary payment. But we're going to see in a second that actually his answer was, in fact, that it's a monetary payment. Watch this. Batad din fak amar le Rav Yosef le Rav Huna bar Chia. May nafka lach mineh. Idina I kenasa. Now, after Rav Nachman, the teacher, left, so then Rav Yosef in the second row, who's a lower student than Rav Huna Bar Chia, asked that question that you asked. Why'd you ask that? What difference does it make if it's a din or a knas? Right, what's the significance? What's, whatever, you have to pay. You have to pay no matter what. So he answered, The difference is if it's a legal judgment, meaning a monetary compensation. Well, then you can learn from here to other cases as well. Now, if this is called damage, then other cases that are similar or would also be called damage. But if it's a fine, fines are given in particular instances. You can't learn from one case of a fine to another case, because a lot often the rabbis decided that we have to make a fine for these types of this case or this category of cases because it's getting out of hand. People are abusing the system, so they have to do that. But it doesn't mean necessarily that there would be an obligation in a different case, even if it has some of the same factors. So that's the question, can we generalize from this or not? That's why I asked. Now, from this fact, we can figure out what the answer was. Since Rav Nachman, he didn't say yes or no, he said, look at the Mishnah. So the fact that you can take the Mishnah and expand it to another case that's similar means that he saw that Rav Nachman is saying this is a monetary compensation, even though the thief didn't actually take the land himself. By telling a thug to go and take it, he's causing damage, and just like that's true in this case, so also in the case of pointing out wheat, yeah, go take that wheat, that's called damages, and that's why Rav Nachman, by saying, see, it's the same as my Mishnah, is therefore implying that this is a monetary obligation and not simply a fine, and therefore you can further generalize to other cases that will come along that will be similar to this one. Baruch Adonai Le'olam, amen v'amen.